Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 103, The Dream Interview Method, July 28th, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
I have a sense if I could only turn the world on to using the mind that works so hard for us every night. We work from a less defensive and a more, really surprisingly, a more objective perspective on ourselves, our lives, and our relationships every night. And most of us just throw most of that away. So as a meaning in my life, I would be very content to die thinking I had moved that forward a little bit to say we have a mind and we're not using it. It's as if we were in a point in our evolution where we could all speak, but none of us had bothered to learn to sing. We could all walk, and none of us have learned to dance.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Gail Delaney, who is the founding president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams and co-director of the Delaney and Flowers Dream Center in San Francisco. She created the Dream Interview Method of Interpretation and has authored 7 books and several audio and video programs on the modern practical uses of dreams for problem solving. Her best-selling book, Living Your Dreams, sparked modern interest in dream incubation in 1979 and showed readers how to target their dreams to help them solve specific problems and creative blocks. Dr. Delaney graduated with highest honors from Princeton University and earned her doctorate in clinical psychology from the Union Graduate School. She studied in Paris and at the C.G. Jung Institute in Zurich, Switzerland. She's been on hundreds of television shows in the U.S., including Good Morning America, the NBC Nightly News, The View, The Montel Williams Show, The Today Show, and has been a guest on The Oprah Show 5 times. She has hosted a 3-hour daily primetime AM radio show, Dream Talk, in the Seattle area, and has presented her work on French, Italian, Canadian, and German radio and television. Now I'm pleased to bring you the interview. Dr. Gail Delaney, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you very much, David.
Yes, it was so wonderful to be able to meet you in person at the Dreams Conference that we recently had at Sonoma State University because, of course, I was familiar with your work through, I probably read your first book, and then I think I heard you once, I know of, maybe more than once on the radio, and so it was great to have an opportunity to be in the workshop that you did at the conference.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed having you, and it's great to be back at the Association for the Study of Dreams again.
Yeah. Now, you've had a very interesting background. I'm sure we can't touch on it all here, but you studied first at Princeton, and then you went on to Paris, and later to the Jung Institute in Zurich. Can you tell us about that progression a bit?
Well, actually, I had hoped to be the next Admiral Harriman of the U.S. with special diplomatic duty to the Soviet Union because I wanted to bring peace between the Soviet Union and the U.S. since 1955 when I saw Khrushchev tell us he would be burying us. And so there I was in
a small ambition.
A small ambition, but, you know, why hope for little things?
Right.
So I went off to Paris in the middle of undergraduate school to a graduate school there where I specialized in Russian studies, which was tremendously interesting because American academics had the story very cockeyed with us that the European communist parties were independent, and they weren't. They were really run by the Soviet Union, and anybody who watched the news there would have to know that. And so that was fascinating. I had some incredible dreams that year that I was living in Paris. And I thought, what is this? My educational system hasn't mentioned a thing about how my mind works nights. So I went into the French bookstores, looking, well, you know, who are the specialists? I wouldn't know them in English, much less in French. And I fell upon two French journalists who wrote a wonderful, non-dogmatic book on dreams. What luck. And then, of course, I read all the dogmatic tracks, Freud, Jung, Pearls, Voss. And I went back to college in Russian studies. And when I noticed there weren't any men around, it took me a while. And no, there were no women anywhere in sight. We had all sorts of interesting professors and people visiting from D.C. and from New York and the U.N., all men. And Princeton, of course, had just become co-educated. So that I was the only woman in all my classes. And I thought, I don't want to be angry for the rest of my career. And I thought, why don't I try to bring peace by studying dreams? Women can be psychologists without constant battle. And so at the end of my junior year, I switched departments, which at Princeton takes enormous amount of writing, and I had to do a whole summer's worth of reading Carl Jung, basically, all the collected work.
Wow.
And so then I went to Zurich after college to become a Jungian. And there I thought, you know, this is more of a religious cult than a psychological system. It's my opinion. I held it strongly. And
interesting. You still hold that opinion?
I do. Okay. I do. And it brought back memories of The True Believer, which I'm really glad I read in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I just didn't want to be a true believer. I wanted to be someone who worked with the brain. The mind is a problem solver. And I didn't want to be a follower of a guru. And while Freud and Jung had wonderful things to say, you treat them like a quarry, not an edifice. And that's a quote from a psychoanalytic friend, Joe Natterson in L.A. And so I found a way of working with dreams that doesn't require any external symbol system. And it just works wonderfully. I had come upon it while I was still an undergraduate and was appalled to see people interpreting my dreams in Zurich with these a priori symbol systems, talking to me only long enough to pontificate on their erudition and what they read. So after about a year in Zurich, I came back here, and I actually did a PhD program at Union Graduate School, but folded into that a year at Sonoma State, a master's degree, because Stan Krippner was there and some other people interested in dreams. And I had a wonderful, wonderful time. And then went on and developed this dream interviewing method of interpretation, focusing on dream incubation. And Loma Flowers and I began our dream center, the Delaney and Flowers Center for the Study of Dreams, because we wanted something that was outside of the academic cycles and outside of a cult, in other words, a follower of a particular leader. And so we tried to train people how to be good interviewers rather than interpreters by asking questions and following the dreamer's lead and not imposing or even suggesting, if we can possibly help it, our own interpretations, but certainly not our own symbolic interpretations.
So you came to call this approach the dream interview method, and indeed it's very down to earth and doesn't bring a lot of assumptions to the process. It was wonderful to have the opportunity to experience it in the workshop. So why don't you take, and I think in the workshop you took us through four or five steps, as I recall, that you had up mm-hmm. on the pad. Why don't you take our listeners through the process, if you would?
Okay,
and maybe illustrating with a dream, you know, as you do it.
Okay. So, David, let's say that you have just had a dream about a cat.
Okay.
Right? And I'm going to say to you, pretend I come from another planet. I'm your interviewer. I'm going to ask you very basic descriptive questions to encourage you to put words to your visual and emotional images in a dream. So when I ask you things like, what's a cat like? You know I've never seen one before. And this way, if you pretend I come from another planet, you come up with quick descriptions that I can then feed back to you and then ask you if they remind you of anything in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give an example, but here are the three steps, the short version, right?
Okay.
I'll ask you to describe the cat. I get a good description. Then I feed back that description in a recapitulation. I try to be concise and say, okay, in your dream, your cat is da-da-da-da-da-da, who does da-da-da-da-da-da. And I say, is that right? You can correct me at that point. Oh, Gail, you put in your own words, or you misemphasized. Or now that you say that, I really want to correct this, or I'd like to add that. Right? That's the recapitulation step. And the third step is the bridging step. Then I recapitulate one more time and say, so is there anything in your life that's like a cat That is, and I recapitulate. So I'm trying to bridge and ask you to look for metaphor between your cat description and something in your life. So here's the example. And it's a good example. I think it helps people remember not to impose their own perceptions, their own knowledge, what they think of as knowledge, their own association. And you can play both parts. You can be both the interviewer and the dreamer. But let's talk about it as two people now because that makes it easier to talk about. All right, so I had a dreamer who had a dream about a cat. And we all know, don't we? Any of us have studied anything. The cats represent the feminine. Now, what that is up to for grabs. Some people believe, as Freud often said, cat is the symbol of the mother. And that's pretty much what you hear. And sometimes religious symbols of cats in Egypt as being symbolic of femininity and other mother feminine principles. Okay, so I had a female dreamer who said, I dreamt of a cat sitting on the windowsill in my room. It came into my room, ran all around, raised a ruckus, and it left. So first I asked a few clarification questions. How'd you feel when it left? Oh, I was so sad, I was in tears. Okay, so I asked, pretend I come from another planet. What are cats like? What's the personality of a cat, and what are they like? And she said, well, cats are aloof and distant, gorgeous. The one in my dream was black and sleek and gorgeous and agile. And they love you when they want to, and they leave you when they want to. And I said, what room is this cat coming into? Oh, it's my bedroom. So then I recapitulate. So you say a cat is sleek, gorgeous. This one's black and sleek and agile. They're distant, aloof. They love you when they want to and leave you when they want to. And she said, yes, that's right. That's a good description. I tried to use only her words in my recapitulation. Then I go for the bridge. I said, so is there anything in your life, any part of yourself, or anyone in your life that's like a black, sleek cat that's distant and aloof, loves you when it wants to, leaves you when it wants to, comes into your bedroom, raises a whole ruckus, leaves, and you're in tears? She immediately said, my boyfriend, and he's black, and he's sleek, and he's everything that I just said about cats.
Wow.
So now imagine in that situation, if we had started to lecture her on the feminine principle, she'd say, well, yes. Well, perhaps, but we would never have gotten to the fact that this cat is what she represented as her boyfriend. And then she said later, a few minutes later, said, you know something? All of my major boyfriends have been cats. What I need is a dog. I need some faithful, loyal, dependent dog who's going to be happy to see me when I come home and wiggle his tail and will love me. And I won't have any doubts that this dog loves me. And she made a major shift in the way she looked at her choices about men.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's just a great short description of both the method of dream interviewing and the peril of bringing to the dreamer or to yourself interpretations upon certain symbols that other people have made.
Okay, take us through, what are the steps again? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All right, first get a good description of all the major images in the dream.
Okay.
And the description is helpful if you keep it brief and with adjectives. Sometimes there'll be stories and associations, but keep them brief and very close to the basic image. And then you recapitulate that description. So you say cats are da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you do this even for yourself to see if you've got a good description there. Did you get the feeling zone of cats? Because you want the facts and the feelings, how you like or don't like cats, all of that stuff. And then you ask the bridge question, and you say, is there anything in your life, anyone in your life, or any part of yourself that's like a cat that you describe as da-da-da-da, and you recapitulate one more time. Now, you do that for all the main elements of the dream. And the elements of your dream can be roughly put into 5 or 6 categories. The setting, the people, the animals, the objects, the feelings, just as important as any other piece, and the action of the plot. Because the action in the cat dream is the cat came into the bedroom and raised a ruckus. Main element in this woman's relationship with her black, sleek, aloof, and distant cat. Who left her when he wanted to and left her when he wanted to.
So if any of those elements are missing, would you query about them to try to bring them out?
Yes. In fact, sometimes, you know, you can't make a bridge. Because, no, it doesn't remind me of anything in my life or anyone or any part of myself. So then you go back to the description. Well, let's try one more time. Tell me more about cats. What are they like? What's the cat in your dream like? And then, I don't have it on my website, but I'm soon going to put it up, is a whole list of what I call the cue card questions. The questions I've spent 35 years honing that get to the point quickly and ask the questions succinctly. Tell me about cats. Tell me more about cats. What's the personality of a cat? What is the cat in your dream like? They're follow-up questions to the basic descriptions that help you get the material you need most efficiently. And it is important, I think, to be efficient. Because if you take 2 hours to work with a dream, you'll only do it every once in a blue moon. If you learn not to put in extra words, such as, well, I was wondering if you could tell me what you were thinking about cats, rather than, tell me, what's a cat like? The word like is so helpful to the dreamer if she suddenly can answer it.
Mm-hmm.
So I will, within a couple of weeks, put my cue cards up, but they're in all my books, all these questions that you ask about the people, the objects, the actions, the plots, the feelings.
Yes. Now, it seems to me that a key step is that bridging one where the person is able to say, well, you know, where in my life is it like this in my dream? And that's the step at which it becomes kind of metaphorical. They see that the dream is a metaphor for something in their life. Is everyone...
Exactly, and that is the main prejudice of my method. I do believe that the images in your dreams are metaphors for something in your life.
And I believe that.
And so I lead the witness in that regard.
Yes, and I believe that as well. So I have no problem with leading the witness in that regard. But I'm wondering if that works for everybody. Some people are just have such a concrete approach to life that do you find that there are some people that just really don't get it?
You know, I've worked at the Veterans Hospital with people who have zero verbal education, almost zero. And I would think that they'd be the most difficult because I'm asking words. But it worked. It works with little children. The people I have the most difficulty with are people who are deeply depressed and highly insecure, and they think they have nothing to say. Isn't that interesting? Just to get to describe their own dream images is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And some who are very concrete work very well because they can give me what I'm asking for are concrete descriptions in the beginning. So tell me, go ahead, you're in the dream, there really is a cat here. Tell me, what's this cat like? How does it feel when he runs around in the room? How does it feel when he leaves? Then you're asking the dreamer to be almost, this is not a hypnotic state, but hypnotic people are in hypnosis, are very concrete. Everything is just what it is. Well, that's what I encourage in the first part, in the descriptive phase and the recapitulation question. But then you ask the dreamer to make the huge leap. What seems to be in our art, what seems to be helping us, is that the words we get from the dreamer, not anything from Freud or from Jung, but from the dreamer, these are the words that the dreamer has used at other days in her life to describe herself or situations in her life or people. Because dreamers inevitably say to me, well, now that you put it that way, and I've only repeated their own words, but they've heard them for the first time, the dreamer says, well, now you put it that way, that's exactly what my brother's like. You know, in fact, just the other day I called him something or something. And so I find that concrete people can do it if you get a rich enough description and you feed it back in the dreamer's own word and to the degree that you can, the dreamer's own tone. Now, one of the things in this bridge question is, notice how we're asking, is there anything in your life, anyone in your life, or any part of yourself that's like this image we just described?
Mm-hmm.
That leaves the dreamer to decide, to recognize where that fits in her life. There are some schools of thought in the pure gestalt that believe that every image in the dream is a part of yourself. Well, I can't fully argue with that because to know anything, you could say to some degree we are it, to know it. But it just doesn't make sense to have this woman look at the part of herself that's like a cat that's distant and aloof and that runs around in her bedroom and leaves her when he loves and leaves her when he wants to. That's the kind of man she chooses. That's the other in her life. That's not a part of herself in any practical, realistic, useful sense. So I let the dreamer choose that. Yeah, the dreamer might well have said, you know, that's a part of me. I act like that with women. Who knows? She might have said that. I might. Mm-hmm. You never know what the dreamer's going to say. Dreamer might describe an oak tree and say, give you a surprising, interesting description. One of the reasons interviewing is so much fun is you never know what someone's going to say about the most mundane images. But then the dreamer will say, you know, I'm like that. And the dreamer will claim it because it's hard to avoid it when she's given a good description.
Yeah.
So there are questions you can ask to make it easier. Let's say that you just told me a dream about Fred, and you absolutely can't stand Fred. He's one of the most irritating people you've ever known. So when I say, what's Fred like? You tell me, oh, he's just such a pain in the neck, and he's so irritable, and he's this and he's that. And I'd feed that back to you in a recapitulation, and I'd ask, so is there anyone in your life or any part of yourself or anything that's like Fred? And you might say, well, actually, Fred, I have to deal with Fred. Well, you might say, you know, I was in a meeting yesterday, and I was acting just like Fred. But let's say you were very defensive. You say, oh, no part of me like Fred. So I'd say, well, one good backup question to open the dreamer up is, why do you think Fred is the way he is? Why is he so irritable? Well, because he feels so attacked all the time, and he's just sick and tired of it. And just in saying that, I see something glimmer in your eyes. Is there any part of you that feels attacked and or you're sick and tired of it? Well, you know, yesterday at this meeting, I was feeling so attacked. Do you think you might have been acting a little bit in a little way like Fred? Well, so other people would have thought so. And then the dreamer warms up to the topic.
That's great. Along the way, you've kind of knocked Freud and Jung and, you know, these guys were deep thinkers and deep scholars. Why is it that you don't want to reap the wisdom of their study and their knowledge and use the symbolic interpretation that Jung and Freud have developed?
I love Freud and I love Jung, but I don't worship either of them. And I think Freud's most important work was not his dreams. It is his basic work about transference of the structure of relationship between people, of repressed issues. We all take it all for granted. We don't. Many of us don't realize that's all Freud. Had
yes.
it not been for Freud, we wouldn't know it.
That's right.
So we live in a sea that is Freud.
Yes.
And for that, I'm very grateful. When he started working on dreams, he got very caught up on his own symbolic system because of his belief about sexuality, aggression, repression, and the discontents of civilization, a book everyone should read. Wonderful reading. But I think when he worked with dreams, he missed the point. He understood, and he was the first. Before I did a huge history on the study of dreams, which hasn't been published because it's much too long, but I could not find anybody except a couple of poets who even hinted at the idea that dreams are really about our psychological selves as we understand it, our individual development for better and for worse. Freud made the most enormous leap. It's just in interpreting the dreams that he got very stuck, I think, in his own belief systems about how your psyche is arranged and how my psyche as a woman is arranged. And Jung fell into the same trap, that there's a male psyche and a female psyche, and they look the way each one of those thought they looked.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't agree with that. Let's look at the fact that Carl Jung died in 1961 in Switzerland. The last woman got to vote in Switzerland in 1990. I lived there. I mean, I lived there in 72 when women had just gotten the vote in most of the cantons. Huh. They were voting according to how their husbands told them to. So in a world where women were so in the pocket of the man, I think Jung did very well. He did say there are wonderful things to what is feminine, to the feminine. But he had very old, ancient yin-yang attitudes toward masculine, the man and the woman. And the only hate mail I ever got was when I wrote an article, a column in a magazine, talking about Jung's attitudes toward women and citing him chapter and verse. And these are Jung's quotes. In fact, I have that on my website if you want to see it. It's called Jung and the Sexes, or Dreams and the Sexes. A whole page on that.
Okay.
And Jung, basically, I'm Jungian of spirit. I believe that dreams help us understand ourselves, help us to grow, develop, evolve. Freud didn't go that far. Jung took it the next step. But again, when Jung got to interpreting, he thought the myths of the ooby-jooby are good interpretive tools for my dreams. Well, that is simply not true in my experience. And that he so exaggerated the archetypal meanings of dreams as to have people doing witch hunts looking in all dreams for archetypes. Why do that? What the person goes to sleep with tonight is what the dreamer knows and what the dreamer uses to select dream images to make a dream story to give you a message. There may be wonderful academic pleasure in seeing the parallels of how many human beings use water. Wonderful. But to say that water is a spirit is to miss a huge percentage of people's dreams. What if you're dreaming of a stream, of a polluted stream, a dry rock bed stream, a tidal wave, dishwater? Think of all the versions of water, garden hose water, water in your swimming pool. They're going to mean different things to different people, and we mustn't jump to conclusions that the fact that it's water means spirit. I had a client who had a dream being with a daughter on the seashore, and a huge tidal wave came, and she had to protect her daughter above all. Now, is she protecting her daughter from the spirit? I said, what are tidal waves? Pretend they come from another planet. What are they like? That word like gets people going.
Yeah.
It's very useful. And she said, oh, they're absolutely overwhelming, and they destroy absolutely everything in their way, and the only way to protect yourself is to get away. Is there anything in your life like a tidal wave that's absolutely overwhelming, destroys everything in its path, and the only way to protect yourself and your daughter is to get away? And she burst into tears, and she said, my husband's alcoholism that I've been denying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that's not the spirit. Unless, of course, the spirit is everything, but let's be practical. And so I think you do better not to assume. If it is the spirit, the dreamer will tell you.
Okay, well, let me play devil's advocate a little bit. Your system might, from the outside, might look a little bit mechanical. You know, step one, step two, step three, step four, step five.
Mm-hmm.
What about intuition? Is there, you know, you've got a lot of experience in this work. Does your own intuition come into play at all here?
I love this question. And I can't tell you that my answer is going to be correct, but I can tell you this is how I experience it. When people watch me work with dreams, when they're new to the technique, they'll often say, oh, you're so intuitive. And I don't think I am at all. In fact, I take my intuition and put it aside in a carefully sequestered space so it doesn't bleed into the dream work. If you ask me why I ask the dreamer a particular question, why I follow up a particular response at any time, stop me and I can tell you, because she said this and we didn't get a full enough description, or because in the recapitulation she corrected me here, there's something very important in her feeling tone about this. You could hear it in the tone of her voice. And what I have found, because of my first work with unions, and with, you know, other people who went to many, many, many workshops in the 70s, as you might imagine.
Yes.
intuition is often what I call the long black cloak that hides people's projections. Because, and these are some of my dearest friends. Joe Natterson likes to share his associations to the dream with his dreamer. He's a psychoanalyst in L.A. And he's a very avant-garde psychoanalyst. But what he's doing is putting his projections, his associations, onto the dreamer's experience. And you can do things with that, but I don't think you do the best dream work. So I think when you're being intuitive, you're getting ideas about what something may mean, I try to train people, ask a question that does not lead the dreamer, doesn't lead the witness, in other words, doesn't give away your idea, your goal. And if the dreamer says yes or no, or goes in that direction, you know right away whether or not your idea is where she's really headed. But don't push her there. Don't nudge her in the direction you want to go, which is what has covered so much dream work through the ages. Don't you think this could be like your husband who drinks? Isn't it more valuable to the dreamer for me to keep getting a better description of the tidal wave until she says, those are the words I use to describe my husband's alcoholism.
Yes.
Makes her take responsibility. So even if I had been right in my guess, my intuition, my projection, it's better for the dreamer to get there first.
Yes, yeah, that's true generally in psychotherapy, that whatever brilliant insight you may have as a therapist, it's always better if the client comes mm-hmm. to that recognition themselves.
A number of therapists say to me, but Gail, you're asking me to go into the dream naked, and the dream is paying me. I have to have the answer.
Uh-huh.
Some people actually say this. And they feel it, and they feel it out of the goodness of their heart, not just out of the idea of I have to look smart. And so what I try to convince them is, you'll be a better therapist, and you'll be much more efficient in your work if you pride yourself not on having the answers, but on having the questions that get the dreamer to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a structure to that. I think the dreams are like a poem or a Shakespearean play,
yes.
tightly constructed. They aren't these loose, vague, bizarre agglomeration of images. And so if you go image by image, these major images, ask for the description, feed back that description in your recapitulation, and then now and then when the time seems right, ask for a bridge. Does this remind you of anything in your life? That's structured. It keeps you from forgetting the main images, and it keeps you talking to the dreamer, the finding of the words, the finding of the interpretation or the metaphor. And then you get proud that you were able to do that rather than give her the answer.
Yes, yes. Now, what's your take on common dreams? For example, dreams of teeth falling out, dreams of falling, flying, being pursued, etc.
Well, you know, 35 years is a long time to be in the field, and I get interviewed for magazines maybe two or three times a month. And I don't think I've ever been interviewed that they haven't said, okay, we'll tell everyone that the dreams are individual, and we'll tell them that you have to ask the dreamer. But meantime, could you tell me what it means when?
Yeah.
When your teeth fall out, when you're falling, when you're flying. They all want their sidebar. So I finally wrote a book on common dreams, and I made it look like a dictionary. I wanted it to be called the Anti-Dictionary Dream Dictionary.
Okay.
They called it In Your Dreams. You know, the title of women, you know, I don't have any control over it. But the book was set up with, okay, here's the common dream, the dream of teeth falling out. You can look that one right up. And then I show the variations of teeth falling out. Some people have teeth falling out and they put the teeth back in. Some people have their teeth crumbling in their hands. Some people have their teeth melting in their mouth. Some people have their teeth knocked out. So there's variety. So can all those dreams mean the same thing? And then I give some quotes on how others have seen that meaning, you know, the fixed answers from Freud, from Jung, from certain folks, which it makes you laugh because they all see them for sure meaning different things. And then I have two dreamers doing dream interviews. Ah, what are teeth like? How does it feel for a human, so this interviewer comes from another planet, to have her teeth fall out? And then I have a list of questions. So if you have a dream of teeth, here's the questions to ask yourself about your teeth falling out. So having said all that, most people, when I ask them, how do you feel when your teeth fall out? I won't tell you what they say. Let me tell you, I was once on a television show with a former psychoanalyst, and I said, why don't you take the next dream? Two cute teenage girls stand up, and they're giggling with their hands over their mouths, and they say, what does it mean, when your teeth fall out? And then they crumble down into their seats laughing that they had been on TV asking questions. So the psychoanalyst said, well, that's a simple dream, and it's obvious. You know, something's coming out of your body, and it's a wish to have babies. Well, I almost fell off my chair. I looked at him and said, do you believe that? We went right to an ad. I just came right out. I just couldn't believe it. So I asked the girls during the break, pretend they come from another planet. How does it feel to have your teeth fall out? Oh, it's terrible. Why is it terrible for humans to have their teeth fall out? Oh, we would look terrible. We would just look awful. Is there anything in your life or any time where you feel like you're going to look awful and you're going to be seen toothless? And, of course, they giggled because they had lots of situations like that. It's very common for people to feel the loss of faith. I think that's where that dream goes most of the time. And maybe most of the time is 70% of the time. I'm guessing wildly because we don't have good figures on it. But when the dreams have more variety, you know what's going on that leads to the teeth falling out?
Yeah.
Or the teeth, someone, woman had a tooth that she put back in and it became a German Shepherd, a police dog.
Wow.
So there's lots of ways it can go.
Sure.
My encouragement to people is, yes, you can find out the general tendencies, how many humans use these dreams, but look for the specifics in your dream, and particularly when the dream occurs, to see what your common dream is saying to you. And the key question to ask about a common dream is, what's going on in the dream? Is this normal for humans to do, as in flying? How do you feel when you're flying? Are there obstacles? What are those obstacles like to your flight? And then does this remind you of anything going on in your life? And then you can usually figure it out. I can give you an example. The flying dream is usually tons of fun. People love it. They're soaring, they're fun,
yeah.
They're showing their friends that they can fly, things like that.
Right.
Well, I had a woman come in and say, Gail, I was trying to fly in my dream, and I couldn't get liftoff. I was about, 5 feet off the ground. I just couldn't. I kept trying to flap my arms, and I couldn't get liftoff. And then I looked down, and my husband was holding on to my left ankle and wouldn't let me go.
Mm.
So I said, so, how'd that feel? I was furious. And what's going on in your life? Is there anything in your life that's like this where you feel like you want to fly and your husband's holding on to your left ankle and keeping you from getting lift off? And she said, well, I've wanted to go back to graduate school and he doesn't want me to go. Does that feel in waking life the way it feels in the dream? And she burst into tears. So her flying dream meant that at
yeah.
that moment. It might
yeah.
not mean that another time.
Right. Right. Well, thank you so much. That's really a good cautionary tale about dream dictionaries, and I like the fact that you wrote a non-dictionary dictionary for dreaming. Now, your first book, Living Your Dreams, which was published in 1979, was all about dream incubation.
Yes.
And that's, of course, become a very popular topic. How did you become interested in that, and where are you with that today?
In 1969, when I was living in Paris, I read a book by Edgar Cayce.
Oh, yes.
And it was not my normal sort of reading. Edgar Cayce was a psychic who died in 1945 in Virginia. But I had gone back during Christmas and asked one of my very best friends, a super bright guy from Yale, what's the best book he'd ever read? And of all things, he gave me a book on a psychic. And I thought, oh, no, now I'm going to have to read this. And I read it, and I was just amazed. It was very interesting to me. And Edgar Cayce said, if you have a problem to solve, pray to God and ask for a dream. So I tried it. And sure enough, I got these dreams. But the little problem was I didn't particularly believe in God. I mean, there may or may not be a God, but I didn't feel addressing him personally made the most sense. So I developed a very simple form that I called the phrase focusing method, where you go to sleep, before you go to sleep, you take your dream journal and you write down a few lines about what you want to dream about. You can skip that step, but what you really must do is write down your question before you go to sleep, because then you don't ask four questions and you remember in the morning what you asked, and you're more likely to recall your dreams because you've at least consulted your journal before sleep. So you write down your one-line question. I need a new idea for this project's work. Or, why do I always pick men who are dead ends? Or, what's really going on in my arguments, my regular arguments with my son? Any kind of question is about an issue in your life. You write it down, a clear one-liner. Go to sleep, focusing on that one question. Just repeat it over and over like a mantra or a lullaby. And when you wake up in the morning, write down whatever's on your mind. It might be a dream. It might be a fragment of a dream. It might be the memory of a friend you haven't seen since high school. You write it down. You go and you take your shower, and then you come back and look at the dream and interview yourself without an assumption that you were successful. Because if you didn't get a dream on the topic, you did get a dream on something useful, and you lose both if you force one to fit into the other
mm-hmm.
category.
Mm-hmm.
So you interview the dream, see what the dream was about, and then after that you ask, does this answer my question? And I found this worked. I did a little study on it in my master's program at Sonoma State. And it works 95% of the time. If you ask a question on a night you're not intoxicated with anything, including fatigue, and if you ask a question about something that is of direct concern to you, not, you know, how can we put a man on Jupiter if you're not an engineer? And people find out very quickly that, one, you go to sleep quickly because you don't worry about your problem. You're repeating that one question over and over as you fall asleep, which is very boring. That puts you right away to sleep while counting sheep. And then you find out that your mind is responsive to you. Your sleepy mind says, okay, we'll focus on this problem for at least one dream tonight. And when I first did book tours, 1981 or so, 80 and 81, the interviewers would say, Delaney claims that you can have a dream on a particular topic on a given night. And then by about 1987, I would say, everybody sort of assumed, yes, we can do that. And it's become much more popular and much more taken for granted that we can target dreams before sleep on issues that are concerned to us. And I think it's extremely helpful in general living and in therapy and in creative endeavors. And it's just plain exciting.
Well, how about in your own life? Have there been any big dreams or incubated dreams that have kind of changed the course of your life?
Oh, many, many, many huge dreams, and dreams that helped me shift. I mean, who could think that you'd be at Princeton, end of your junior year, you've written your junior papers, two junior papers, which are probably 50 to 100 pages each, and you've done all your coursework. You're going into your senior year, and I think, how could I possibly change departments? It didn't even occur to me to go and ask anyone, but I had a dream one night that said, go to the student union, which I'd been to only twice in a year, and talk about changing your department with the head of the religion department. So I went there, and there he was. And he said, well, Gail, what have you been doing? I didn't know him well. I'd only had one course with him. I said, well, I was thinking of changing departments. And he looked at me, and he said, well, it's not entirely impossible if you're willing to work really hard this summer. And that happened. Now, that was a pretty big dream, because I don't know that I would have gone and asked anyone. I assumed you couldn't do that in one year, have a whole new major from Russian studies into a religion, philosophy, psychology bridge.
Yeah.
And then I had tons of dreams about my courtship with my future husband, whom I was married to for 19 years. Lots of dreams that helped me through our divorce, deciding whether or not to divorce and how to do it with heart. And then being single and in the trenches of being single. Dreams are marvelously helpful. If you're dating someone, look to your dreams right away, because your dreams pick up on the things you'd rather not notice, perhaps, and that are handy. If you think about your relationships that have lasted for several years and many years, look back at the dreams you had in the first month or two, if you keep a dream journal, and you'll find that most of the difficult issues were things that your dreams picked up right away. And so that's very important. Dreams of self-esteem issues, you know, would anyone be attracted to me after I get divorced at 40, I don't know how old, I was probably 45 when I got divorced or so. And I had dreams saying, don't worry, this will be just fine, and they were very convincing. And sure enough, it was fine. I've had dreams of spiritual, mystical beauty that are so extraordinary that I feel that they infuse my life with a kind of energy that is like champagne. It just bubbles all the time. And it feels like I got that from being open to my dreams.
Wow, that really feeds right into what was going to be my next question. Maybe it answers it, because, you know, you've been doing this for so long. You had your own radio show. You've written books. You're doing interviews all the time. And I've just wondered, you know, how do you keep going over this material over and over again without burning out on it?
Well, I have a little, you know, I have a lot of cheerleader in me. So I'm not a good therapist. And I just got a call. I was up in Sun Valley where I ice skate in summertime. Sun Valley, Idaho has a beautiful outdoor skating rink. And there I was skating, and I got a call. Someone said, here, I've got a call. And it was a New York producer who wanted to know if I'd like to do a television show on dreams and romance, you know, how to date and use your dreams. Well, needless to say, that's exactly what I'm writing a book on, what I'm excited about. And so I thought, yes, when I moved to New York, oh, I'm not sure about that, from San Francisco. But I think my first thought was, boy, I could reach a broad public with my own show, so it wouldn't have to be just sound bites, so there'd still be too many sound bites for my pleasure. And I could do that. And I have this sense, if I could only turn the world on to using the mind that works so hard for us every night. We work from a less defensive and a more, really surprisingly, a more objective perspective on ourselves, our lives, and our relationships every night. And most of us just throw most of that away. So as a meaning in my life, I would be very content to die thinking I had moved that forward a little bit to say we have a mind and we're not using it. It's as if we were in a point in our evolution where we could all speak, but none of us have bothered to learn to sing. Or we could all walk, and none of us have learned to dance. And to me, we think, we use our problem-solving skills. I think we do a lot unconsciously. A lot of us, of course, wake up with solutions in the morning and don't remember any dreams. But there's more there. It's much richer. So I'd like to turn the world on to that. And so how can I get bored with it? I just don't.
That's really wonderful. And that image of the bubbling champagne really does fit you very well. Okay.
Well, I must say that I was probably born with it, you know, biologically. My father was highly energetic. But there are key dreams for my life that sort of infused me with the bubbles.
Yeah, yes.
Like electrically, and it's there. It doesn't go away.
Well, you know, we're going to have to, I hope you'll be willing to come back, because there's a whole other direction that your life has taken that we haven't had a chance to discuss, but you've got another website called Choose Romance, and you talked about, you know, after the end of your marriage, what were you going to do, and, you know, would you find love again, and so on. And now you've become a dating and romance coach, and so I think that would be a very interesting topic for a future interview.
Well, I'd be happy to, and it was my dream work that led me into it. With clients who were missing out on dating, they didn't know how to date, these wonderful people, good men, good women, who just didn't know how to relate to the opposite sex. And so I'd take them shopping, and I'd get their house to be male or female friendly, and I'd talk about dating behaviors, and I'd say, now let's look at your dream. And so it just fed right into it. Who knew?
Who knew, indeed? Somehow, some inner part of you knew, evidently, and brought you in that direction. So, Dr. Gail Delaney, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you, David. You're just a lot of fun, and you don't do sound bites, and thank you very much.
I do hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Gail Delaney. Well, I've still got that cold. I'm sure you can hear it in my voice. Now, clearly, she's a take-no-prisoners, independent thinker who refuses to worship at the altars of Freud, Jung, or Fritz Perls. Now, for myself, I continue to draw inspiration from all three of those guys. And at first blush, Delaney's approach might seem simplistic. However, I've seen it in action, and I've used it as part of my own repertoire. She's broken it down in such a way that it is simple, but not simplistic. It's simple, but nonetheless powerful, and far less likely to lead one astray than other approaches. The whole trick in dream work, I find, is to get people to tumble to the fact that the dream is speaking in the language of metaphor. Lots of people get stuck when it comes to understanding their dreams because they insist on staying on a literal level. And Delaney's approach of getting people to describe the dream elements in detail, taking nothing for granted, is really effective and so important. The person may say, for example, I'm driving a car, and then go on to talk about other aspects of the dream. And you might immediately have an image of a car in your mind and think you know what they're talking about. But Delaney cautions us to say something along the lines of, imagine I'm a Martian. What is a car? What's it used for? Now, you might think you know that a car is used for transportation, but what if the dreamer says it's used for impressing girls? That makes a huge difference and can keep you on the right track. Trying to educate people that dreams speak metaphorically can be a real challenge, especially if you're not dealing with college-educated, literate middle-class white adults. Not everyone will understand the question, how is a moldy piece of Swiss cheese a metaphor for your life? But as Delaney points out, pretty much everyone gets questioning along the lines of, how is a moldy piece of Swiss cheese like something that's going on inside you or in your outer life or like someone in your life or something along those lines? So I do encourage you to try this dream interview method on your own dreams and with those of friends and family, and be careful to stick to the rules and not to make any, quotes, brilliant intuitive interpretations. And then judge for yourself the effectiveness of this important technique.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And shrink wrap radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio.
It's shrink wrap radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
Well, I'm still trying to shake a persistent cough, and so my voice may not sound fully up to par. I've had these things in the past, and sometimes they've hung on for 6 weeks or so. Oh, well. My previous show featured a listener interview with Anna, the man in Israel, on love, and it marked a bit of a departure from our usual fare, and I know Anna and I would both welcome any thoughts or reactions you might have about that episode. Remember, in addition to email, you can make comments right on the website at shrinkwrapradio.com. Unfortunately, there are no new additions to our Frapper map. I'm sure there are listeners out there who are not on the map yet. So if you're listening and you're not on the map, there's a place on the Shrink Wrap Radio website where you can add yourself to the Shrink Wrap Radio map, Frapper map. And of course, the sponsors for this show are Podshow and GoDaddy. Remember to use the code SHRINK3 at checkout from GoDaddy to get a discount on your next domain name or web hosting purchase at GoDaddy.com.
Hi, this is Nicole Gretton from Montreal, Canada, at the IASD Dream Conference, and you are in a dream with Dr. Dave.
Nicole, thank you for that lovely transition. Now let's take a look in our email bag. First we hear, Dear Dr. Dave, congratulations to you on the first 100, and thank you for your podcast. You are a wonderful presence and have been excellent company for me during my commute and at the gym. Well, that's great. As you remember, I'm the Feldenkrais guy. I also had a Gestalt background in the 1970s from Philadelphia. Eventually, if you're interested in exploring Feldenkrais work on your show, I'd be happy to participate. And he gives me a link to an article about himself. And I think that's a good idea. We should definitely consider that. He says, but I would like to suggest two people who would also make great guests. One is Matthew Cohen. Matthew is well known in bodywork circles and has influenced many healers in the Philadelphia region. He trained as a bioenergeticist in the late 60s with John Perakos. That's certainly a name I'm familiar with. Lots of people that I know around here also trained with John. And in the 70s, he trained with Ida Rolf, another name I'm quite familiar with. He's a delightful and kind man who understands healing on many levels. His website is, and he gives me the website here, which is BodySynergyInstitute.com, and he attached an interview with him. Then the letter goes on to say, another great guest would be Dr. Norman Doidge. His book on brain plasticity, The Brain That Changes Itself, would be right up your alley. He has been out and about selling the book, so this might be a good time to pursue him as a guest. And then he gives his website as NormanDoidge.com, D-O-I-D-G-E. He says, I hope you have a wonderful summer and keep on keeping on. Best wishes, Bob. Bob, thanks so much for that. And indeed, I will consider your suggestions for future guests, including yourself, I think we could do with more coverage of body work in this series. And so we'll try to follow up on that. At the same time, I have to tell you, I have a very long guest to-do list of possible guests. I don't think I'll ever run out of guests, thanks to all the wonderful suggestions I'm getting from listeners, as well as my own inspirations in that department. And let's see, we hear from listener Stephanie, who writes, I would be very interested to hear a Lillian Rubin PhD interviewed on resilience theory. She wrote The Transcendent Child. She's a psychologist, psychotherapist, and lives in San Francisco. So there's another great suggestion. And Stephanie goes on to say, also, I would like to hear a show on attachment theory. So thank you, Stephanie. Those are both great ideas. Next, we hear from Yorkshire, England, Ian, who writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. Just a quick email to say how much I love the show. Like one of your other listeners, I'm from Yorkshire here in England, a city called Leeds. I'm currently studying for a bachelor's degree in social sciences with psychological studies, as well as training to be a counselor, too. My main area of interest, however, is in post-traumatic stress disorder and the link to chronic pain disorder. I'm a survivor of both. I also edit a website which deals with both of these subjects, mainly centered on the approaches of Rogers and Beck, but like to use a variety of approaches in my own survival strategies, such as TIR, I'm not sure what that refers to, guided imagery, relaxation techniques, and also surf when waves and body commit, probably meant to say permit. I have a wonderful, loving, and understanding wife, Donna, who is studying counseling alongside me. We have two amazing children, Kyle and Coral, who always manage to make us smile even on those darkest of days. Anyway, love the whole concept of what you're doing, and I'm therefore slowly working my way through the back catalog of shows. Anyway, once again, thank you for providing such a wonderful show, and I will most definitely be spreading the word at this side of the water. Good. Incidentally, I was last in America in 1996, based at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Absolutely loved it, North Carolina, and also managed to spend some time down in South Carolina on the coast. Hope to come back one day with the family and catch some warm waves for a change. All the best for the future, Ian. Ian, I'm wondering if you're originally an American or what a Brit would be doing at Camp Lejeune. Do we, in fact, do some cross-training of military Brits there, or what's the deal, I'm wondering? So happy to hear about your work. I was also surprised to hear about surfing in England. I didn't know anybody surfed in England. So that's news to me. I'll bet you wear a wetsuit, though. And I think you'd be a good guest in the future. You should contact me and volunteer yourself as a guest after you finish your studies and you get a little bit more experience under your belt in those areas in which you and your wife are working. Next, we hear from Marcia, who writes, Dear Dr. Dave, I recently stumbled upon your fantastic array of informative podcasts and had to let you know how very much I appreciate what you're doing. Keep up the great work. Regards, Marcia. Thank you for that, Marcia. And then we hear from Kirsten, who writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. It was fabulous to meet you in person at the IASD Dream Conference. Your familiar voice stands out in a crowd. Also, I love the soundscape episode you followed up with. It was nice to hear both from people attending the conference and from presenters that I didn't get to see. I hope you do the same with the APA conference. And yes, please do a show with Ron Malashok. I loved his string theory presentation and would love to hear more. Hope all is well with you. I'll be listening. Best, Kirsten. Hey, Kirsten, thanks for that email and for the transition that you sent that I used in the past. And yes, I am very much looking forward to getting around to us hearing from Ron Malashek, a former Sonoma State student and now Jungian analyst. And he gave a very stimulating presentation on string theory. I feel like maybe my audience might be a little bit saturated on the topic of dreams right now, but I think his is enough of a departure that I should put it in the lineup. So thanks for that suggestion. So I think that's going to wrap it up for today. You can send your emails, as usual, to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can always leave voicemail for me on Skype, where my name is ShrinkPod, or you can leave me voice messages on MyChingo, and there's a logo on the website. Just click on that logo, and if you've got a mic on your computer, you can leave a message there. If you don't have a mic on your computer, leave a voicemail on our phone message machine at 206-337-0622. Please help us to grow our audience by spreading the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. And if you have a podcast or a blog or a MySpace or a LinkedIn page or Facebook, I should add now, put a link and a plug there. So thanks again to Dr. Gail Delaney for her insight on dream work. And please join us for our next show, which will be with therapist and cyberspace author Dr. Joan Gillespie, and we'll be talking about cyber sex. Don't think you'll want to miss that one. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.